Okay, let's process this morning's, the last session this morning, okay? What was the difficulty that you experienced writing the strategic issue statement? What what was the, everything about it, right? Yeah. The writing itself, okay? Okay. My English 101 professor, okay, in college, he said, okay, this is English Composition 101, freshman college. He said, if you want to learn how to write, there's only one way to do it, which is to write. So he said, in this class, every day, it was MWF, every day you come in, you submit one page. It's a composition on anything. You can describe your roommate. You could tell a story. Minimum one page. And he gave us a single space standard. He said, if you don't have a paper, you don't have to come in that class because you're going to get an F. Okay? I don't care how lousy the material is, but you need to give me one page. He said, the only way to learn how to write is to write.
Very good.
Okay? And so he said, I'm serious. He said, if you don't, I'm gonna look for your name in the submissions. If you don't submit it, don't bother coming the next class. You get an F. You just have to repeat. I never forgot that. So some of us, and then he would read the compositions in class. Okay? The best compositions. Okay? I came from the provinces. So my first time to live in Manila, away from my family, in a boarding house, and I was completely insecure. For one semester, I did not say one word in class. Not one word. My seatmate, Mariano del Castillo, also known as Associate Justice Mariano del Castillo. I was Castillo, he's del Castillo. So Marian, we called him Marian, was my seatmate. And if Marian did not bump into me, he would not think I was there, because I did not say one word. When my English composition teacher said, you have to submit one page every class, I found myself pouring out my silence into the printed page, okay? And I got read, by the way, if he reads your composition, he will not tell you who it is. He said, I want to teach you the pride of authorship. That's why people can invent pseudonyms, because they don't need other people to know who they are. It's the pride of creating something in and of itself. So he would read the best compositions, but he will say, okay, you know who you are. And you know, we would look at one another, who's composed. I got read 2-3 times, okay? And I was terrified, because I thought he might call me to recite. And that he built my confidence. Now, what he told the class, I will never forget. I'll share it with you. He said, writing is one thing. But if you want to learn how to write, there's another way to learn, which is to read. Okay? Now, the writing an issue statement is not exactly like writing a novel. It's a very disciplined and structured business correspondence. And so, if I extend the lesson, as a suggestion to you, if you want to learn how to write in a business way, well, read business publications. And you might say, yawn, and the most boring thing on earth. Well, Time Magazine has a good style, okay? Bloomberg Business Week has a good style. You could go to historical time issues, so you don't have to pay for time issues if you go to time.com. Or CNN, the digital page of CNN, or BBC, okay? But you will pick up some very efficient way to use the English language, okay? And so that's my suggestion to you, because the writing of an issue statement is not like writing a biography, or it's different. It's too unromantic. It's too structured, and I saw a lot of you were struggling. Well, you know, it's... business writing is just as agonizing as any kind of writing. And so do not be surprised if you actually agonize writing issue statement, because it is agonizing, especially if you want to be accurate. Okay, anything else? Anyone else? Your experience this morning. Why should you write it down? What's the answer? You could forget. Okay? Why should you write it down? Well, your team, if you're part of a team, you want to have a common language. You want to have a common understanding of the issue. If you're working with a team, you need to write things down so that you have a common understanding. Very, very important. And of course, God forbid, if you get run over by a truck, whoever will replace you has a copy of what issues you are addressing. Okay? There's a legacy dimension there. Okay. Again, 15 minutes is atrociously short. It's unreasonably short. But some of you caught on what I was saying. I mean, this group had as their issue discipleship culture. And I was going around the table. I said, you know what? Why is that an issue in Victory? Because of all churches I've had the opportunity to observe, Victory has the most has the richest discipleship culture. And as they were discussing it, one of the team members said, you know what? It's not really discipleship culture. What we mean is assimilation, getting congregants into small groups. That's what we really mean. So as you do background statements, you say, aha, this is pala the issue. Excuse me, that's part of the learning. So don't be afraid to change the issue title as you do the background statement, because that's part of the process. Okay, now, I wanted to close this morning with this, which we didn't have time. Many leaders can identify accurately the strategic issues facing their institutions, but very few actually act on them. Okay? It is one thing to accurately identify the issue. The purpose is so that you will act on them. Now, believe it or not, in the real world, many leaders, many people can identify an issue but not act on it. It's like being convicted of sin and you refuse to confess. Okay? Why? Well, because those leaders forget to put the institution's interests above their own. If what has to be done will affect them, then they say, no, that's a non-issue, because that's going to affect me. Okay? Or they forget they are only temporary stewards of their organizations, and they need to pass it on to the next set of leaders. And essentially, they lack a sense of legacy. Wow. When you learn to identify strategic issues, you will invariably affect the future generation. You know why? Because strategic issues sometimes are so huge, they don't change for 20 years. And if you identify it accurately, we had a marketing vice president for marketing international in Del Monte. He came to help us develop our strategic plan, and I learned a lot of what I'm teaching you from him. 20 years later, the strategy still was relevant and correct and accurate. You see, and our business went like this. We kept on following his blueprint. So the incentive for you is, if you identify a strategic issue, if that issue is huge, you will impact many generations of leaders after you. So it is important. It is worthwhile sweating the issue. Okay? All right. Okay. We've come from developing a strategic mindset. We go from the satellite, we land on Earth, and we're going to do something this afternoon very close to Earth. It's called execution. And the title of this afternoon session is Value Delivery and Customer Service. Okay? You might say, what? Are we SM or what? You're more like Rustans, actually, but... Value delivery and customer service, what we want to take you through is, okay, strategizing is one thing, but how do we execute? How do we develop execution rigor? So in this session, let's call it value delivery customer service session one. There are two questions. The first question is this: what in the first place is Victory's business? If you want to deliver value well, you have to ask the question, what value are we supposed to deliver to begin with? Okay? So what value do you aim to deliver to your congregants? What is the business of Victory? Oh, by the way, the other issue I forgot, no? Sometimes you struggle with developing objectives, okay? And when you are struggling to make it specific, measurable, and time-bound, and you can't seem to articulate it, you may be aiming for something that is not within your control. For example, if your objective is to save 10,000 souls by 2014. Now, who saves souls anyway? Whose work is that? It's the Holy Spirit. It's God's. It's Jesus's. That's not my job. What's my job? I share the gospel. And I live my life in such a way that my target audience sees me to authenticate that gospel. But I can't save her. That's God's job. So sometimes your objective, you might be aiming for something that's not within your control. That's one symptom. The other is you might be aiming for such a huge objective which you might want to slice into three different objectives. In that case, your job is to input. Okay? For example, you want to develop high-quality leaders. If you want to develop high-quality leaders, you have to input them with data. Download some knowledge into them. You have to nurture them so that hopefully they respond well to the input. But the response is beyond your control. The only thing you control is input, you see. So that becomes to input this body of leadership knowledge into leaders, into 7,000 leaders by 2014. That is specific, it's measurable, and time-bound. But to say, to develop high-quality leaders, 7,000 high-quality leaders by 2014, how would you know? It's very difficult to achieve that. I mean, you could give them a quiz and you will get head knowledge. But what about heart knowledge? How do you measure that? So sometimes you might be aiming for the wrong thing. So when you're having a difficulty writing down an objective, ask yourself the question, am I aiming for something I can't, which is not within my control? Okay? Or is it too big an objective? Should I slice it into two or three sub-objectives? Anyway. Okay. If you want to deliver value, you have to know what on earth is the value you're supposed to deliver. Okay? So, believe it or not, I will give you 10 minutes to do a breakout group exercise again. You know, meanwhile, Paul and I will take a nap and we'll just wake up when you're... the question, instructions, brainstorm with your group to answer the following questions. Exactly what value does Victory aim to deliver to its congregants? Okay? Is the value important as perceived by the congregant? Is the value unique to Victory, or can a congregant go elsewhere to get the same value? How does Victory deliver this value in a manner that is unique compared to other churches? How do you measure, if at all, whether you have delivered this value to congregants? And what do you do with the findings of your measurements, if any? So, okay, you're a campus minister. You're ministering to people. You've engaged. You've shared the gospel. And now the individual is responding to you. And you've identified this individual as a... you need to connect him with a Victory church. So you do that. And you're crossing your finger that after attending the first service, that this guy's going to come back and still continue to talk to you, correct? So you are concerned, what value? I mean, if I'm that person, I ask you, why should I go there? Why should I go, you know, I mean, you want me to change my religion or what? Or what's the big deal? What's going to happen to me? So what do you tell him or her? So that's the kind of question, the set of questions are, I just want you to be conscious, okay? We need to deliver value as a body of Christ, as a local body, the Fort, Alabang, you belt, you name it. As a local body, ano nga ba? What na nga ba is the value we want people to get? Okay, so I don't want to give you the answers. Otherwise, you're just going to take a nap and have somebody. Okay? So do you have any questions, by the way? That's the assignment. 10 minutes, no extension. Any questions? Okay, no extension, 154. Oh, by the way, we are not talking about core values. Okay? We're talking about I'm an unchurched person. Okay? Unchurched. If I go to a Victory church, what do I get? What's going to happen to me? That's the value. Okay? What is it that we want to deliver to that person who walks into our church? What do we want them to feel? What do we want them to experience? What is it from the point of view of the new congregant? Look at it from the point of view of the visitor. Okay? If you go to Starbucks, you get coffee. If you go to Victory, what do you get? Oh, here's another hint. Look at your own experience. Why did you keep coming back? What value were you getting? 4 minutes. 1 minute, 10 seconds. 30 seconds. All right, time's up. Can I have your attention, please? This is what we will do. Instead of presentations, we'll do this plenary. So concentrate on your laptops, okay? And I'm going to ask the question, and then I'm going to go through the groups, answer the questions, okay? The session is value delivery, okay? We must deliver value to our quote-unquote customers. Let's call them congregants. They're not customers because customers pay, okay? But no, you don't have to pay to come to a Victory gathering. So let's call them congregants. We must deliver value to the congregants, okay? According to our mission and vision. So the first question is, exactly what value does Victory aim to deliver to its congregants? What's the answer? Give me random. Discipleship. Worship experience. Very good. Okay. If you said worship experience, that is a correct answer. Okay. Now, what kind of worship experience? You say that? Powerful? Relevant preaching? Dynamic? Excellent worship service? I'm missing something. No, I'm still talking about worship experience. Worship experience. Huh? Hang on. Sight, sound. Okay, now look at it from the point of view of your congregant. 9 out of 10, he or she comes from a Catholic worship experience. Okay. No. Huh? Well, hey, pleasant. Yeah, why not? But what's substantive? You know, when I walk out, when your first time you attended a Victory service, you walked out and say, wow. That was different. So, real, relevant. I'm not hearing the word I want to hear. Life-changing, okay. Engaging, yes. It's friendly.
that someone did not hit me on the head with do's and don'ts. Okay? Someone did not hit me on the head with do's and don'ts. Okay? And I walked in with my tattoo on my arm, and no one rejected me. And I'm going to say, wow, no one's staring at me. In fact, I'm the one staring at everyone else because everyone else has a tattoo. Okay? So if you said worship experience, that's a value. In fact, the value. What else? What else? Worship experience, you've gone very far. Let's start from the very beginning. I'm just walking into the door. What value do you want me to have? Layo naman ninyo. Earth to victory. Come in, please. I'm walking into the door. What do you want me to feel?
Welcoming.
I'm welcome. Hey, now, yeah, friendly, yeah. Right. Okay. Now, there is a way of greeting that goes like this. Good morning. You know, I mean, that's weird. So there's a way of welcoming people without terrorizing them. Okay. So I walk in. It's a welcoming environment. Okay. I've been to enough churches where my walking in did not make a difference. You have been to those churches too. What else? So, it's a welcoming environment. It's air conditioned. Hey, that helps. Yeah, that helps. I mean, most Catholic churches are not air conditioned. In fact, some of you were saved because you took naps inside the Victory worship hall because it was air conditioned. It was pleasant. Okay? It's welcoming. It's pleasant. Worship experience. What else? What? Let's make Himai the worship experience. Huh? Relevant. You guys are all in the sky here. Give me words that I can eat. Worship experience. Huh? No. What do you say worship experience? What is it? People like me. What did we do during worship? Worship is such a big word. What did we do?
Music.
We sang. Huh? What kind of songs did we sing?
Modern.
Yeah. It was not hymnal. Hello? Very big. You see, you take it for granted. You're taking your value for granted. I'm forcing you to identify your value. Okay? I've walked into a Baptist church. God bless Baptists. I love Baptists. But they said, turn to hymn number 78. Okay, that's fine. No problem. But then the whole thing was so, you know, I mean, I don't like it here. I mean, now, it mainline Christian churches tend to be so, they're gone. Okay? So there's something different about Victory. It's, you know, it's easy, it's friendly, it's light. Hindi siya mabigat. It's light. Okay? But what else about the worship experience? Modern, yeah. It was not this, you know. There was a band for crying out loud. Wow. Okay? What else? I walked in the door. What did I realize? In most Victory churches, anyway. I don't know if it's true for all. I call it the Paul Barker factor. These guys are on time. Wow. These guys are weird. They're on time. And there's no one rushing up and down the stage 2 minutes before the thing goes. And when that thing strikes 9:00, it goes bang and it starts. See? So make him by the worship experience. What value are we? Do we want to? Because see, what's happening is success has made you complacent. You don't even know what value you're delivering because you're taking it for granted. So I want you to have an out-of-body experience. Get out of your bodies and look at yourself from the outside. So that you'll realize, the value. And this is where contextual analysis makes sense. A Catholic walks in. And that is why a lot of Catholic masses now incorporate bands. They're trying to inoculate. They're trying to copy the evangelical worship style. Of course, they can't, because the guy comes out and he's wearing a sotana and he's all pompous and you know. For your target audience, you have the perfect value. But I'm discovering you don't even know what that value is. Dress code, excellent. I mean, you can walk in slippers and no one's going to, maybe people won't sit beside you, but no one's going to, no, I'm just joking. Okay? Yes. Yeah, irreligious language, very good. Simplicity, irreligious language. What else? Very good. There's informality and yet it's orderly. There's a place for my kids. Multimedia, yes. Yeah. It was just you and the pastor. I mean, okay. So now. Okay, so you understand what we're talking about, value, okay? Because when you begin to run your own church, you got to deliver that value. And you must be aware of it. So when you deviate, it's not legalistic. The environment is not legalistic, okay? It's not all about money, but I hear about money. But they're kind of light about it. They're kind of easy about it, okay? Okay, how do you measure if you have delivered that value, if at all? Okay, attendance, what else? Repeat orders, repeat visits. Okay, feedback, do you have a feedback system? Okay, who reads the feedback?
Very informal.
I have not seen a feedback system. Well, it's in the tithing envelope. Okay, lousy message or whatever. Okay, but generally, if I'm not mistaken, there is no measurement. Other than attendance, there is no measurement. Okay, and now I think the reason why the quality is kept up is because the pastoral staff themselves are very vociferous in giving feedback. But generally speaking, I think it's a weak underbelly of the Victory system. There is no feedback mechanism, okay? For example, in some churches, okay, they are seated, let's say a congregation of 1,000, they will get 100 people at random with a feedback sheet for the preacher's benefit. So that, and typically if only half of them respond, the preacher will have 50 responses. You know, and preachers are dying to get feedback. Okay, sometimes people, preachers die because of the feedback. Because, but they need feedback. I mean, hey, let's face it. A lot of pastors, and I'm one of them. I mean, do things out of context, basically embellish a story to the point of distorting the truth, or misquotes the a verse. Pastors need feedback, and that's a weak underbelly. You are taking for granted the value is delivered. It is being delivered, but there is no feedback mechanism. And the quality will not be maintained unless there's feedback. Sometimes the music is too loud. And sometimes it's not because it's a rock band. It's because it's the mixing. It's a technical thing. Okay. Sometimes the ushers are noisy. If you sit at the back and the ushers are noisy, if there's no feedback mechanism, you might lose the guy. They may not come back. Okay, so this is execution. Okay, we're way, way beyond strategy. You need to execute well, but to execute well, you have to know what your product is. By the way, this is marketing 101 too. Okay, what value are you in a business environment? You say what's your product? Here I'm saying what's the value? What are you aiming to deliver to the congregant? Okay, are you measuring it? And the answer is no. Basically, we don't measure it. Why? We're too successful. That's the truth. We are very successful. That's why we don't measure. Now, there will come a time when we need to measure so we can re-engineer and adjust, re-engineer accurately, recalibrate accurately. But you need feedback. And some preaching is atrocious. I was incorrect. I am a recipient of a lot of preachers. That's not true. What the guy said is absolutely not true. Or sometimes the guy says something which is sexist. And that's offensive. That's actually offensive. But there's no feedback mechanism. So how will the preacher learn to do a better job? Okay. And getting feedback is one thing, but acting on the feedback is another. Okay, so now, moving right along. Any questions? Yes.
I'm not sure if everyone is familiar, but I remember when I got hired, it was the time that Victory was developing its key standard. So in my mind right now, I was thinking of, if we're talking about value, and then if at this level it's hard for us, and I'm trying to reconcile the key standards, which is it includes the worship services, the pastoral, and the discipleship, then now the question in my mind is, do we have to eventually reconsider our key standards? Because if we can't clearly define the value, then it has to affect the key standards and then the measures. Because for most of the Victory staff, it's very clear to us because of the key standards, the excellent worship service experience. And then there's a language barrier to it. Like for us, we never got to qualify because we never got to like do it from the perspective of a first timer. So now I'm getting confused with assessing the value and then the key standards and juggling between the two of them. When you execute.
Key standards and value are almost the same. Basically the same. What I'm doing is I'm doing something that's very unnatural to you guys because you don't manage it there. So I'm taking you through an experience that is foreign to you, to most of you. The admin people, this is not foreign to them. This is what they do every other day. Okay? I mean, is the air conditioning temperature correct? Is the et cetera, et cetera. Okay? But otherwise, you need to understand this so that when you bring a new disciple to church for the first time, I hope you ask that person, how was that for you? Yeah? How was that for you? Because you need to make adjustments and to give feedback. Okay? Yes, Ado.
To some degree, the measurement of the values are done, but only when this is so I feel so nervous in front of all you guys. Only when there's church consulting, but the churches that avail of that are either in a plateau or declining. So that happens in the provincial churches.
Well, okay. Actually, Metro Manila also initiates
the whole idea of measuring because it's to begin with, a muscle that we're not very used to. We're more mission-oriented than just vision, goal, outward. We don't really look to see, did we do it? And we just keep running. So, but over a few years ago, VMA, Sila Ado, initiated Natural Church Development's survey. It measures certain health components, you know, and all of these questions are asked, you know, like, we get a very small sample because I think their technology is a 30-man survey, and they say 30 people. I guess there's a technology behind the survey.
As long as it is random enough, it can represent. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then what they do is they get a random sample of 30 people, and that those 30 people answer a barrage of questions that, at the end of the day, get measured to 8 categories that NCDS determined to be health criteria for a local church. It felt awkward for us because it wasn't our terminology or our framework of doing things, but it was helpful for us to capture at least general feel of health-wise where people stood, where we were strong, where we were weak, and everything. So there's a little bit of that, but definitely something that can be develop further.
And along that line, we are now developing an EN Church Health Criteria. It's a 7-category analytical tool that will do all these things. But it's still in the works.
Let me give you feedback. And this is typical of high-growth churches. Okay, in business, what you are doing is what we call you're opening up new businesses every day. Okay, you're introducing new products every day, or you're winning new souls every day through the gospel of Jesus Christ. Okay, what you're missing out is this: you're no longer a startup. You're a big business. I mean, big spiritual business, and you need to take care of the base. When you're managing a company, there are always two parts of the company: the base business and new business. You are so geared up to new business, no one's paying attention to the base business. The problem is you've got 12,000 head churches, 8,000 member churches. There's a base there that needs to be ministered to. Okay, and that's why you're going through what you're going through here, management and all of this. Highfalutin strategic planning, et cetera, because the church wants you to learn how to manage the base. Victory is very strong in missions and generating new disciples. This course to me is like a regrouping. Hey, let's regroup. Somebody's got to take care of the house while we go out and hunt for new souls, you see? So that's what we're going through here. Okay. Believe it or not, you're ready for the next breakout session. Before coffee break. Which is on page 1 of session 1 in the afternoon. Who is Victory's primary target congregant? Does Victory have secondary and tertiary target congregants? So, instructions: discuss with your group answers to the following questions. Who is Victory's primary target congregant? Does Victory have secondary and tertiary target congregants? It doesn't matter if you don't understand what those means. But the primary is the most important. Secondary is less than primary, and tertiary is even less than secondary. Are there segments within the primary target group that are large enough to merit segmentation and specific ministry focus? And is the conduct of our services and ministry consistent with our primary target congregant, why and why not? Okay, 10 minutes, no extension, ready, go. Baka 5 minutes lang siguro ito. 5 minutes lang, ha? 5 minutes. Let's do a plenary. Okay, plenary. We are Victory Metro Manila. Who is Victory Metro Manila's primary target congregant? What's the answer?
I'm church young people.
Where? Correct. You have to state that because your primary target congregant is not unchurched youth from Ilocos. Very clear. So the primary target congregant is unchurched youth in Metro Manila. Who is the secondary target congregant? A secondary target congregant is someone who, by virtue of my pulling in the primary target congregant, it will be a natural thing for those people to be pulled in, which would basically be siblings, parents, and friends. Okay, very good. Who is your tertiary? Do you have a tertiary target congregant?
Yes.
Who are they? Community. Okay. Dito. No, but the oikos of the secondary is secondary. Okay. Tertiary. Church transfers. No, you don't target. They're churched already. Tertiary. What? Okay. You know the geographic thing is Metro Manila. So you've got the youth, and you've got their siblings and parents. Who is not a parent, but is no longer a youth, but lives in Metro Manila? Young professionals. Because you're talking Metro Manila, okay? You've got the teenager with his siblings and parents, so you've got the adults who is walking around Metro Manila unchurched and lost and in need of the Lord, but will be happy to have a rock and roll kind of worship service. It's the young professionals. Are you with me? Young professionals, okay? That's a natural tertiary. Now, let me ask you, the next question is this. Next question. Are there segments within the primary target group that are large enough to merit segmentation and specific ministry focus? The primary target group is unchurched youth in Metro Manila. Within unchurched youth in Metro Manila, is there a segment there that is worth targeting?
Yes.
Who?
Students.
High school, very good, okay? You're drilling down. Unchurched youth in Metro Manila. But within this, there is high school and college. Very, very huge segment. Huge segment. And what I'm trying, it's funny. I'm telling you what you're already doing. It's just when you articulate it, you can't articulate it because the fish does not know what water is, you know? What is water? I don't know. You see? You need an out-of-body experience, all right? So, the primary target congregant is unchurched youth. But the primary target segment, it's called market segmentation. If you go for all of the youth, you're gonna burn out. But if you target the schooled youth in Metro Manila, it's very efficient. You know why? Because 5,000 of them are in one location. You don't have to go to 5,000 homes. They're in one location. It's very efficient. There is an unusual congregation of the target audience in schools. So it is brilliant. You see, you're more brilliant than you realize. Okay. You had no idea how brilliant you were. Third question. Is the conduct of our services and ministries consistent with our primary target congregant segment?
Yes.
See, that's why we rock and we roll, because the primary target congregant is a young person. You see? So there's method to this madness. See? There is method to this madness. Because we are targeting people who are young, because the demographics in the Philippines, huge population young, and you can't target everybody, so you go to schools because it's super efficient. As a one campus minister has the potential to contact 5,000 people very efficiently.
Wow.
Because they're in one location. Amazing. Okay. Questions? Okay. Questions, comments? All right, 10 minutes. 2040.